chapter 15.
Krishna erects the Mathura fort. After killing Kansa, his wife became widow. It is a custom in Vedic civilization that woman is never independent. They have got three stages of life, namely, in childhood, a woman should live under the protection of the father. In youthhood, an woman should live under the protection of the young husband. But after the death of the husband, either she should live under the protection of grown-up children, or if she has no grown-up children, she must go back to her father and live under her protection as widow. It appears that Kansa had no grown-up son. Therefore, his wife, after being widow, returned to the shelter of her father. Appears also the Kansa had two queens. One is Asti and the other is Prati. And both of them happen to be the daughter of King Jarasandha, the lord of Bihar province, which was in the olden days known as Magadha Raj. So both the queens, after being widowed, returned to their father's house. After reaching there, both the queens explained their awkward position after Kansa's death, and the king of Magadha, Jarasandha, was very much mortified hearing the pitiable condition of his daughter. When Jarasandha was just informed of the death of Kansa, he decided that he would make the world without any member of the Jodhu dynasty. In other words, he decided that since Krishna has killed Kansa, therefore the whole dynasty should be killed. On this decision, he began to make huge arrangement to attack the kingdom of Mathura with his innumerable Okhavani Sena. Okhavani Sena means a company of military flanks consisting of many thousands of chariots, many thousands of horses, many thousands of elephants, and many thousands of infantry soldiers. Jarasandha possessed such 13 batches of military planks, and in order to retaliate the death of Kansa, he took with him all his military strength and attacked the capital of the Jodhu kings, Mathura, surrounding it from all directions. Sri Krishna, who appeared as an ordinary human being, apparently saw the immense military strength of Jarasandha as if it was just like the ocean which could cover the beach at any moment. He also perceived that the inhabitants of Mathura were overwhelmed with fear out of the military display of Jarasandha, who attacked Mathura from all sides. Now he began to think within himself the mission of his incarnation and how to tackle with the present situation before him. He thought it wise that he was not going to conquer over the kingdom of Magad. Therefore, to kill the king of Magad, namely Jarasandha, was useless. Better, his mission was to diminish the overburdened population of the world. So he took it an opportunity that so many men, chariots, elephants, horses, the military strength of Jarasandha had appeared before him, and he decided to kill the military strength of Jarasandha, so that he would again go back and went organizing another military strength. When Lord Krishna was thinking like that, at that time, two beautiful chariots, full with a driver, weapons, flags, and other equipment, just arrived before him from the outer space. Krishna saw the two chariots present before him. He immediately addressed his eldest brother, Balaram, who is known as Sankarsan also, and began to address him as follows. My dear elder brother, you are the best amongst the Aryans. You are the Lord of the universe. Specifically, you are the protector of the Jadu dynasty, who has now greatest danger in front of the soldiers of Jarasandha, such they are very much aggrieved at the circumstances. Just to give them proper protection, your chariot is also present here, which is also full with necessary weapons for you. Therefore, I request you to sit down on your chariot and kill all these soldiers and military strength of the enemy. Actually, both of us have descended on this earth just to kill such unnecessary assembly of military strength and to give protection to the pious devotees. So we have now the opportunity to fulfill our mission. Please let us execute it. Thus, Krishna and Balaram, the descendants of the Dasharatha king, decided to finish the 13 companies of military strength of Jarasandha, and they equipped themselves with military dress, got up on their chariot. Krishna was specifically being on the chariot on which Daruk was the driver. Whatever a small quantity of military strength they possessed, they took with them and came out of the city of Mathura and began to throw their respective counsels. But curiously enough, although the other party was equipped with greater military strength, still just after hearing the vibration of the counsel of Krishna, they were threatened to their heart. Jarasandha, when he saw both Rama and Krishna, he was a little bit compassionate, because both Krishna and Balaram happened to be in a relationship, his grandson. Vyasananda specifically addressed Krishna as Purushadham. Actually, Krishna is officially known in all Vedic literature as Purusha Uttam. Jarasandha, although he had no such intention to address Krishna as Purusha Uttam, but great scholars, they derive the meaning of Purushadham as one who makes all other personalities downwards. Actually, nobody can be equal or greater than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Jarasandha continued to say that it will be a great dishonor for him that he would fight with boys like Krishna and Balaram. We addressed specifically to Krishna because he actually killed Kamsa. So he addressed him as the killer of the relative. Kamsa killed so many of his nephews, but Jarasandha did not take notice of it. But Krishna, because he killed his maternal uncle Kamsa, he tried to criticize him. That is the way of demoniac dealing. Demons do not find out their own faults, but try to find out the fault of their other friends. Jarasandha also criticized Krishna that he was not even a Kshatriya. Krishna, being raised by Maharaj Nanda, was not a Kshatriya, but a Vaishya. Vaishyas are generally called Guptas. Also the word Gupta can be used as hidden. So, Krishna was both hidden by Nanda Maharaj, and as Nanda Maharaj happened to be a Vaishya king, so he was raised by him. And Jarasandha accused Krishna with three kinds of faults, namely that he killed his own maternal uncle, and he was not even a Kshatriya, therefore he felt ashamed to fight with him. Now he turns towards Balaram and addresses him, Rama, if you like, you can fight with him. And if you have got patience, then you can wait for being killed by my arrows. Thus you can be promoted to heaven. It is stated in the scripture, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, that a Kshatriya, while fighting, becomes benefited. If a Kshatriya gains victory over the fight, he enjoys the results of victory, but even if he is killed in the fight, he is promoted in the heavenly kingdom. Next verse, Krishna, after hearing Jarasandha speaking like that, answered, dear King Jarasandha, those who are heroes, they do not talk much, but they become engaged in showing their prowess. Because you are talking much, it appears that you are assured of his death in this battle. Therefore, we do not care to hear you anymore, because it is useless to hear the words of a person who is going to die, or one who is very much distressed. Now, after this, Jarasandha, in order to fight with Krishna, surrounded him from all sides with great military strength, and it appeared as the sun is covered by the air with cloud and dust. Timing, similarly, Krishna the sun was covered by the military strength of Jarasandha. Krishna and Balaram's chariot was marked with the picture of Garuda and palm trees. women population of Mathura city were all on the top of the houses and palaces and gates to see the wonderful fight that when Krishna's chariot was surrounded by Jarasandha's military strength, they could not find Krishna's chariot, and immediately they became so much aggrieved that some of them fainted. Krishna, when he saw thus overwhelmed by the military strength of Jarasandha, and his small number of soldiers were being harassed by them, he immediately took up his bow of the name of Sranga. Krishna, because he has got the specific bow.
Chapter 58 continued. When Krishna took his bow, known as Sranga, he began to take out his arrows from the case and was one after another setting on the string of the bows and throwing towards the enemy, as a result of which gradually all the elephants, horses and infantry soldiers of Jarasandha were continually being killed, and the incessant throwing of arrows by Krishna appeared to be whirlwind of blazing fire, killing all the military strength of Jarasandha. When Krishna was fighting in this way with his arrow, at that time gradually all the elephants began to fall down, cut off their heads. Similarly, all the horses cut off their necks were falling down. And when the horses fell down, the chariots also, along with their flags, the chariot fighter and the chariot driver began to fall down. And as far as the infantry soldiers are concerned, almost all of them being cut off their heads and hands and legs, began to fall down on the field of the battle. In this way, many thousands of elephants and horses being killed, their blood began to flow down just like the waves of a river. In that river, the hands cut off of the men were appearing like snakes. Their heads appeared like tortoises, and the dead body of the elephant appeared to be different small islands. Similarly, the dead horses also appeared to be like sharp pieces. In this way, by the arrangement of the Supreme Will, there was a big river of blood filled up with all paraphernalia. The hands and legs of the infantry soldiers cut off were floating just like different kinds of fishes. The hairs of the soldiers were floating like seaweeds and moss, and the floating bows of the soldiers appeared to be different waves of the river, and over and above them all the jewelry stones thrown out from the body of the soldiers and the commanders appeared to be so many pebbles rolling down the river of the blood. Lord Balaram, who is also known as Sankarsan, with his club, he began to fight in such a heroic way that the river of blood created by Krishna still became overflooded. And by seeing the ghastly and horrible scene, those who were cowards they were very much afraid of, and those who were heroes, they, with great delight, began to talk between themselves about the heroism of the two brothers. The fighting of Lord Krishna Balaram with Jarasandha, equipped with the vast ocean of military strength, and converting the whole situation into such ghastly scene, was not actually an ordinary fighting. People of ordinary merit could not estimate how it could be possible, but when he accepts such activities as pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whose will everything could be possible, then we can make an estimate of the great fighting. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is creating, maintaining, and dissolving the cosmic manifestation by his will only, for him to create such devastating scene while fighting with an enemy is not a wonderful act. And yet, because Krishna and Balaram were fighting Jarasandha just like ordinary human being, the whole affair appeared to be a wonderful action. In this way, when all the soldiers and military strength of Jarasandha were killed, and simply he was living, certainly he became very much depressed. In that stage of his life, Sri Balaramji immediately arrested him, exactly in the manner when one lion captures another lion with great strength. When Lord Balaram was binding Jarasandha with the rope of Varuna and ordinary ropes also, at that time Lord Krishna, with some greater future plan, asked him not to arrest him. When Jarasandha was released in this way by Krishna, Jarasandha, as a great hero of the fighting, became too much ashamed. And then he decided that no more he should live as a king, but he would resign from his position of royal order and go to the forest for practicing meditation under severe austerity and penances. But as he was returning home with some other royal friends, he was advised not to act like that, but to regain strength to fight again with Krishna in the near future. The princely friends of Jarasandha began to instruct him that from ordinary estimation, it was not possible for him to become defeated by the strength of the Jodhu kings, but the defeat which he had experienced was simply to his ill luck. The princely order encouraged him that so far his fighting was concerned, it was certainly heroic, and the defeat on account of past misdeeds should not be taken very seriously, because on the part of King Jarasandha there was no fault in the matter of fighting. In this way, Jarasandha, the king of Magadha province, when he lost all his strength and he was released from the arrest almost in an insulting manner for the prince, he could do nothing but began to return to his kingdom. In this way, when Lord Krishna conquered over the soldiers of Jarasandha, although his military strength was very little arrangement in comparison to Jarasandha, still not a pinch of his strength was lost, whereas all the strength of Jarasandha were killed. At that time, the denizens of heaven became very much pleased and began to offer their respect to the Lord by showers of flowers and chanting glorification of the Lord. They accepted the victory of the Lord with great appreciation. When Jarasandha returned back and everything was made safe from the danger of Mathura's city being imminently attacked, at that time the citizens of Mathura organized a combined service of professional singers like Sutal, Madadha, and poets who could compose nice songs. And in this way, the citizens began to chant the victory glorification of Lord Krishna. When Lord Krishna was entering the city after the victory, that time many bugles, concerts, kettle drums began to be sounded, and vibration of various musical instruments like bheri, turi, veena, flutes, and mridanga, all of them joined together made a beautiful reception for Lord Krishna. While Krishna was entering the city, the whole city was very much cleansed and sprinkled with water all over the different streets and roads, and the inhabitants, being too much engladdened, decorated their respective houses, stores and shops with flags and festoons. Everywhere the Brahmins were chanting Vedic mantras at different places. People, out of curiosity, constructed different grates at different crossing of roads and entrances of lanes and streets. When Lord Krishna was entering the city of Mathura, so nicely decorated in a festive attitude, that time the ladies and the girls of Mathura, in order to make the ceremony most auspicious, prepared different kinds of garlands of flowers. And as it is the Vedic customs, they took jugar mixed with freshly grown green grasses and began to strew them here and there to make the victory jubilation more auspicious. Krishna was passing through the street. All the ladies and women began to see him with great affection and brightening eyes. Krishna and Balaram also collected various kinds of booties, ornaments and jewels from the battlefield. After collecting them carefully, he brought them home and presented to the king Ugrasen. Krishna thus offered his respect in the victory celebration to his grandfather, because he was at that time the crowned king of the Jodhu dynasty. Jarasandha, the king of Magad, not only seized the city of Mathura once, but he attacked it for 17 times in the same way, equipped with the same number of military flanks, and each and every time he was defeated similarly. All his soldiers and military strength were killed by Krishna, and he had to return disappointed in the same way. The princely order of the Jodhu dynasty each time arrested Jarasandha in the same way, again released him in an insulting manner. Jarasandha also shamelessly returned back home every time without being ashamed. Next paragraph. When eighth attack by Jayasandha was being attempted, in the meantime, another Mohammedan kingdom, somewhere on the southern part of Mathura, or the kingdom of the Jadus, became attracted by the opulence of the Jadu dynasty, and he also attacked the city of Mathura. It is said that the king of the Javans, or the Mohammedans, known as Kala Javan, was induced by Narada. The story is narrated in the Vishnu Purana that sometimes a Gargamani, the priest of the Jodha dynasty, was taunted by his brother-in-law, which hearing the kings of the Jodha dynasty laughed at him, and Gargamani became angry on this laughter of the Jodha kings, and he decided that he would produce somebody who would be very much fearful to the Jodha dynasty. So he appeased Lord Shiva and got from him the benediction of creating somebody fearful to the Jodha dynasty, and later on he begotten the Kala Javan son in the wife of a Mohammedan king, and later on this Kala Javan inquired from Narada, who are the most powerful kings in the world, and Narada informed him that the Jodhus are the most powerful kings. So, being informed by Narada, this Kala Javana attacked the city of Mathura when Jarasandha was attempting to attack Mathura again for the eighth time. This Kala Javan king was very much anxious to declare war with some king of the world who would be a right combatant for him. But without finding such right combatant and being informed by Narada, he thought it wise to attack Mathura. And when he attacked Mathura, he brought with him 30 millions of Mohammedan soldiers along with him, and he seized the Mathura city all around. When the Mathura city was thus seized, Lord Sri Krishna began to consult with Baladeva how much the Jodha dynasty was placed into distress, being attacked by two formidable enemies, namely Jarasandha and the Kala Javan. Time was very short. While the Kala Javan already seized the Mathura city from all sides, it was expected that the day after next, Jarasandha was also coming equipped with similar number of division of soldiers as he attempted previously for 7 times. Krishna was right in thinking about Jarasandha to take the opportunity of attacking Mathura again during the period of its being seized over by the Kala Javan. Therefore, he thought it wise to take precautionary measures for defending two strategic points, because if only from one strategic point, both Krishna and Balaram were engaged to fight with the Kalajavan. From the other strategic point, Jarasandha may come back and attack the whole Yadu family to take revenge upon them because he was defeated. Same time, he may either kill them altogether or take them arrested at his place, because Jarasandha was too much powerful. As such, Krishna decided to construct a formidable fort in a place where no two-legged animal, either man or demon, could enter into. He decided also to keep his relatives in that fortified place. And then he would begin fighting with the enemies. It appears from this statement that formerly Dwarka was also part of the kingdom of Mathura. Because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that Krishna constructed fort somewhere in the midst of the sea. In Mathura, there is a river Jamuna, but there is no approach to the sea. And the remnants of the fort which Krishna constructed on the Bay of Dwarka are still existing. Therefore, he first of all constructed a very strong wall in the midst of this sea, covering a space 96 square miles. The surrounding walls and the city itself within the sea was certainly wonderful and planned and constructed by Vishwakarma. No ordinary architect can construct such fort within the sea, but architect like Vishwakarma, who is considered to be the engineer amongst the demigods, can execute such wonderful craftsmanship anywhere in any part of the universe. If huge planets could be floated in weightlessness in the outer space by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wonderful architecture, construction of a fort within the sea, covering a space of 96 square miles, was not a very wonderful act. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that this new city developed within the sea had regular planned roads, streets, lanes, just suitable to the exact position of well-constructed city. Not only there were well-planned roads, streets and lanes, but there were well-planned parks and gardens filled with plants known as kalpavriksha, or desire trees. These desire trees are not ordinary trees of this material world. The desire trees are found in the spiritual world. So by Krishna's supreme will, everything is possible. So in this city of Dwarka, constructed by Krishna, such desire trees were implanted. This city was also full with many palaces and gopura, which is a big gate. These gopura gates are still found in some of the big temples. It is very high and constructed with high artistic skill. Such palaces and gates were clipped on the head by golden water pots within bracket colors. These water pots on the gates or on the palace are considered to be auspicious. sign. Almost all the palaces and gates were skyscrapers. In each and every house, there are big pots of gold and silver to stock grains in the underground rooms. And there were many golden water pots within such rooms. The bedrooms were all bedecked with jewels, and the four floors were mosaiced, the pavement of Morocco jewel. The city was full of houses installed with Vishnu deity worshipped by the descendants of Jadu. All the palaces were skyscrapers. The residential quarters were so arranged that different castes of people, namely the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, in their respective quarters. It appears from this statement that the caste system, as it is already confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, were existing even in that time. In the center of the city, another residential quarter specifically made for King Ugrasan. This palace was dazzling amongst all other houses. When the demigods saw that Krishna was constructing a particular city of his own choice, he sent the celebrated Parijata tree of the heavenly planet for being implanted in the new city, as well as he sent his parliamentary house, Sudharma. The specific quality of this assembly house is that anyone who would participate within this assembly house would overcome the influence of invalidity due to old age. The demigod Varuna also presented one horse which was all white except the ears being black, and this horse could run in the speed of the mind. Kubera, the treasurer of the demigods, also presented the art of eight perfectional stage of material opulences. In this way, all the demigods began to present their respective gifts according to their different capacities. In other words, there are demigods to the number of 33 billions, and each of them are entrusted with a particular department for managing the universal affairs. All the demigods, taking the opportunity of presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and constructing a city of his own choice, thus presented their respective gifts and made the city of Mathura unique within the universe. This statement proves that there are innumerable demigods, undoubtedly, but none of them are independent of Krishna. Actually, as stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna is the Supreme Master and all others are servants. So all the servants took opportunity of rendering service to Krishna when he was personally present within this universe. This example should be followed by all others, especially those who are Krishna conscious persons, to serve Krishna by their respective ability. In this way, when the new city was fully constructed according to the plan, Krishna transferred all the inhabitants of Mathura and entrusted Sri Balaram as the city father. After this, he consulted with Balaram, and being garlanded with lotus flower, came out of the city to meet the Kalajavan, who had already seized around the Mathura city without taking any weapon in his hand. Next paragraph. Thus ends the 50th chapter in the matter of Krishna erects the Pathura fort. Arjavan, before this, never saw Krishna. So when Krishna came out, he first saw him extraordinarily beautiful, dressed in yellow garments. He was passing through his assembly of soldiers. It appeared just like the moon in the sky passing through the assembled clouds. He was fortunate enough also to mark the specific impression on the chest of Sri Krishna, namely lines of Sivatsa and the Kaustubh jewel, Kaustubha, Kaustubh jewel. So Kalajavan, however, saw him in Vishnu form, well-built body with four hands and eyes like newly grown lotus petals. He saw him, Krishna, always blissful, with nice forehead, beautiful face, with smiling, restless eyebrows, moving earrings. Before seeing Krishna, he had heard about Krishna from Narada, and corroborating the description he heard from Narada about Krishna, specific marks and jewels on his chest, and lotus-like eyes, garlanded with lotus flowers, and similar other beautiful features of body, he concluded that this beautiful personality must be Vasudeva. He became confident about his becoming Lord Vasudeva, because every description of Narada which he heard previously was corroborated by the presence of Krishna. Kalajavan was, however, very much astonished to see that Vasudeva, Krishna, was passing through without any weapons in his hand, without any chariot, and he was walking on legs. He, however, came there to fight with Krishna, but to sufficient etiquette, he also concluded that he would not also take any kind of weapon, but he would fight with him hand to hand. He therefore prepared himself to capture Krishna and fight with him. Krishna, however, was going ahead without looking on the Kalajavana, and he began to follow him with a purpose to capture him. Unfortunately, in spite of his all speed running, he could not capture Krishna, because Krishna cannot be captured even by the speed of the mind of great yogis. He can be captured by devotional service and surrender. The Kalajavan was not practiced to the devotional service and wanted to capture Krishna. Therefore, he could not do so. He was following Krishna, running very fast, and was thinking, now he is almost near us, he would capture him, but he could not. Krishna thus well at the Kalajavan, far, far away, near a hill, and he entered a cave of that hill. Kalajavan thought that Krishna was trying to avoid fighting with him, and thus began to chastise him with the following words, "Oh, you, Krishna, I heard that you are a great hero born in the family of Jodhu dynasty, but I see you are very cowardly, running away from fighting. It is not worthy of your good name and family tradition." In this way, Kalajavan was following Krishna, running very fast, but still he could not capture him. because he was not free from all contamination of sinful life. According to Vedic culture, anyone who does not live following the regulative principles of life observed by the higher caste, like the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or even by the laborer class, the Shudras, such persons are called Mlechhas and Javanas. Vedic social convention of life is so planned that a person born accepted as Shudra can gradually be elevated to the position of a Brahmin by cultural advancement of life. This cultural advancement of life is known as samskara, the reformatory or purificatory process. According to Vedic scriptures, nobody becomes a Brahmin or a Mlechha or Javan simply by birth. By birth, everyone is accepted as a Shudra, and one has to elevate himself by the purificatory process to the stage of Brahminical life, and if he does not so, if he degrades further, then he is called Mlechhan Javan. So this Kal Javan, belonging to the group of Mlechhans and Javan, could not approach Krishna on account of his being contaminated by sinful activities. The four principles of restriction, namely illicit sex indulgence, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication, are part and parcel of the life of the Mlechhas and Javans, and without being freed from such sinful activities, nobody can make any advancement in God's realization. The Bhagavad Gita therefore confirms that one who is completely freed from all sinful reactions can be engaged in devotional service of Krishna consciousness. Note this 51st chapter should be named as a deliverance of Muchkunda. While Krishna was entering the cave of the hill, and a Kaljavan following him was chastising him in various unpalatable words, Krishna immediately disappeared from the sight of Kaljavan entering the cave, and while the Kaljavan entered the cave following Krishna, he saw that a man was lying down and sleeping within the cave. Kaljavan was very much anxious to fight with Krishna, but when within the cave, he could not see Krishna, but a man was lying down. He thought that Krishna, instead of fighting, was sleeping within this cave. Kaljavan was very much puffed up and proud of strength, and he thought that Krishna was avoiding a fight. Therefore, he very strongly kicked the sleeping man, thinking him to be Krishna. The sleeping man was lying down there since a very long time. So when he was awakened by kicking off Kaljavan, he immediately opened his eyes and began to see all directions. At last, he began to see Kaljavan, who was standing nearby. This man was untimely awakened, and therefore he was very angry, and when he looked upon Kaljavan with angry mood, immediately a rays of fire emanated from his eyes, and the Kaljavan became burnt into ashes within a moment.